In September 2001, Jeff Immelt replaced the most famous CEO in history, Jack Welch, at the helm of General Electric. Less than a week into his tenure, the 9/11 terrorist attacks shook the nation and the company to its core. GE was connected to nearly every part of the tragedy. GE financed planes powered by GE manufactured engines had just destroyed real estate that was insured by GE issued policies. Facing an unprecedented situation, Immelt knew his response would set the tone for businesses everywhere that looked to GE, one of America's biggest and most heralded corporations, for direction. But over his tenure, GE struggled. In his new book, Hot Seat, What I Learned Leading a Great American Company, Immelt offers a rigorous, candid interrogation of himself and his tenure, detailing for the first time his proudest moments and his biggest mistakes. Again, the name of the book is Hot Seat, and it is a pleasure to welcome Jeff Immelt to the roundtable this morning. Jeff, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, great show. Thanks. Great to be here.
So after being CEO of General Electric, at what point did you think you wanted to tell your story and some would even say your side of the story?
Yeah, you know, so I retired and I moved to California, and you know, I had a lot of time to think and think about what, you know, what I learned and watch the coverage. And I'd say, you know, kind of the second half of 2018, I hired a co-writer and you know, really, I would say I felt that the GE story was complicated and that context was lacking and some things were just wrong, that a lot of really good people were being hurt by the narrative, people that always did their best for the company. I hired a co-writer to go speak with 75 people and another 25 GE folks have read the book. And I just wanted to get a more complete story, both good and bad. So the intention wasn't, you know, I'm tougher on myself than I am on anybody else. So the purpose wasn't to really be defensive. The purpose was to get a more complete narrative out there. And I'd say, Joe, beyond that, you know, today all leadership is kind of crisis leadership. And I felt like, you know, my team and I had led through crisis and maybe a few things that we had done or not done would be instructive to other people that could read the book.
So you know this very well. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but the rap when you leave is that you come in at 2001, you leave in 2017, you go in, the company's doing great, and then you become known as the guy who ruined GE. How fair is that upon your investigation through this book? And why do you think that even exists? I mean, obviously the numbers tell us a story, but what puts that story into context?
Yeah, you know, Joe, look, I mean, I think if you look at the history, over that time period, we generated $270 billion of earnings and cash, more than the previous 110 years of the company combined. The franchises were all number one. We had really good initiatives underway in the company and a very good team. But on the other side, the stock price was challenged. Succession didn't go the way I would have liked. And, you know, so it's complicated, right? When you tell the story, and it's more nuanced than what you describe. But at the end of the day, I worked with some tremendously talented people, and I wanted this to reflect their good work as well. And so, you know, I'm the CEO, so I'm the biggest target, yeah. But I felt like that just too many things were out there that just were not true or not fair. So it's a complicated story, and the book tries to tell both sides.
One of those people on your team was your CFO, Jeff Bornstein. And as you say, you consider him a hero.
Yeah, I think Jeff Bornstein is a super high integrity, dedicated, hardworking guy that had to do the job of two and three people. And I always will regret the way he's been treated in this. And I loved working with him. But it's not just Jeff. I think our whole finance function was tremendously valued, both by me and by others. And I just think they were dedicated and honest and did great work.
You spent a long time defending Jack Welch, who was your predecessor. In the book, you are very frank, and he does not come off well in this volume. I think you would agree with me on that. At what point did your feelings start to change? Or are you just being honest now?
No, you know, Joe, look, when I was running the company, you know, I never felt like it was good to reflect one way or the other. You know, I just wasn't one of those guys that dwelled on the past. I think Jack was a fantastic CEO, but the world changed. And again, you know, Joe, I think it's more nuanced than the way you describe it. I think if you read the book, you can tell how much respect I had for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I have seen, and I read the book, but there are moments where you certainly are much more critical than you were previously, where you would demur and say, you know, he's a fine guy.
No doubt. But I think what I tried to do was tell an accurate story, right? And I had lots of help writing it. I had lots of colleagues who my co-writer, Amy Wallace, interviewed, who were contemporaneously with me at GE and could reflect on, you know, kind of what was before and what was after. So, yeah, I mean, I just think what I tried to do in the book was be reflective, the good stuff and the bad stuff.
So with that said, what impact do you think he had on your tenure, making your job perhaps more difficult?
Well, when you follow somebody famous, it's always got its own complications and challenges. I think the company was at a position at the end of the, you know, let's say 1990s, where we had a very strong financial arm, kind of an underinvested industrial portfolio, and the stock traded as a tech stock, right? So it was, you know, perception didn't quite equal reality. But, you know, my decisions were my own. I never really felt like, and I just think the company needed to change. And really, I never looked backwards and thought about the way he would do things. I always kind of leaned forward and tried to take the company into the future.
I mean, as you say, he's famous. He was the first celebrity CEO, really. But it was a less than perfect legacy that you often had to deal with.
Yeah, I don't think I'm alone in that. I just think times change and every company has to change. I think the fact that he was so prominent was really spoke to the era of the 90s. But I think CEOs who dwell on the past are always going to have a hard time pushing into the future. And I just never tried to think about it in those terms. I really just didn't, Joe. I don't feel like... I think it was complicated following, but my decisions were my own.
What is it like, given that you're talking to us and we are miles away from Schenectady, we are miles away from the Hudson River, we are miles away from Pittsfield, Massachusetts? These are all areas, certainly Schenectady is a GE town, it was always a GE town, and the issues that you walk into as CEO, give me a sense of what it is like to try to further a company when there is so much bad press in these towns, especially in the cleanup of the Hudson River, the cleanup of the Housatonic, the cleanup in Pittsfield, and those issues as you're trying to move a company forward.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I lived in Pittsfield for 7 years, so I was pretty close to it. I would just say I always had a very strong attachment to Schenectady and the region. I viewed the Global Research Center as a jewel and continuously invested in it. The turbine business was a tough business, but we slugged our way, you know, to gain global market share. So I always felt that was a part of my responsibility. And the Hudson, and we just dealt with it as we could with, you know, kind of leaning forward and trying to solve the problem as best we could with transparency. So I guess, Joe, the way I would answer is, sure, we have all those challenges and issues, but I certainly never try to hide from them. I spent a lot of time in the region. I spent a lot of time in the businesses there. And I think, you know, we just did our best to improve the image and continue to make investments. And the last thing I would say, Joe, is, you know, my dad worked at GE. I grew up in a GE town in Cincinnati. Yep. I had a good context for, you know, what it felt like to be part of a GE community.
But many, and I believe you would agree with this, many feel let down by that as jobs leave Schenectady, of course, and that's inevitable. GE is certainly not the only company to deal with that. But it still exists, of course. And then there is the pollution aspect of it, where people are dying in the community, of which GE was a big part, and they're blaming the company that you're running.
Yeah, look, I understand all of that. I would give you just a couple things that were in my mind. You know, the first one was, no one had to explain to me the value of a GE job because my dad worked at GE. So I always felt like I was slugging it out with the people in the factories. You know, Bob Santamore was the union leader. He lived in the area. I respected Bob. I spent a lot of time with Bob thinking about how to reshape jobs, bring jobs back, things like that. On the Hudson, you know, Joe, as you well know, this was from 1975. Now we're almost 50 years later or more.
Yeah.
I think, you know, what I tried to do was the best job we could under the auspices of the EPA and you know, just really do our best. I think that's what we did. And, you know, we had a great environmental team. A lot of them lived in the Capital Region. And I just think we held our head up high and said, look, we weren't around for all of this, but we want to do the best we can for the community under the direction of the EPA.
So final question on this topic, I promise. But when it comes to responsibility, when you look at it, obviously you were not, as you say, rightfully so, this is an issue that was going on for decades in these communities when it comes to the pollution. Your job is to deal with how to clean it up and to make it better. But when you look as trying to also defend the company, is it defendable? What mistakes did the company make, and what lessons did they learn in that process going forward?
Oh gosh, I think we tried to follow the science. We also tried to follow the mood of the community. It was a complicated issue over a long period of time. And all I can say is, you know, we did the best, in my time anyhow, we did the best we could to cooperate with the community. And you know, Joe, we invested more than $3 billion just on the Hudson. I think we did a good job, and tried to make the river clean and tried to follow the lead. I'm sure we didn't make everybody happy in the process, but we really did the best we could.
You talk in the book, and it's certainly fair to say that you own your mistakes. You said this at the beginning. You talk about some of these. And what I found interesting is that one of your biggest regrets, it seems, comes very, very early in your tenure, of you having a choice to reset the company after September 11th and make really hard investment choices that you didn't make.
Yeah, I would say, Joe, it was more along the lines of slowing a business down, not investing. You know, in other words,
right,
when not through 9/11, I think the world was being reset, and we had a choice to really, really kind of dramatically slow down the growth of our financial service business and reinvest rapidly in the industrial business. And what we did is we reinvested in the industrial business, and that's when we acquired N1 Rend and life sciences and avionics business, a bunch of businesses, invested in the Global Research Center. But we didn't slow down the growth of GE Capital. And, you know, that worked up until the financial crisis, but by the time the financial crisis hit, it didn't look that smart, right? And I say, look, if I had it to do over again, I would have just been more thoughtful about that strategic choice at that time.
When you left the company in the summer of 2017, and then the stock price goes up, how do you feel about that? And what do you look at really the current state? And because that has to stay with you, doesn't it?
Oh, gosh. You know, Joe, I think about the company every day. I talk to people. I cheer for the current team. I know people, some people feel like I let them down, and I'll carry that for the rest of my life. But look, I always did my best, as did my team. We took the company through some immense challenges. We tried, really, we took on all of the cycles that came at us. And we always did it with our eyes open and a smile on our face and a commitment to doing everything with the highest integrity. So I just had to leave it, you know, let it go as it goes, right? And, I'm still a big shareholder today. I still cheer for the company every day and want them to do well.
I realize this may not be the fairest of questions, but I ask it out of curiosity, just because it is what it is. But when people who perhaps are not as much in the know like myself will look and will say, we often read your name when you were with the company, we'll often read your name, or even now, as someone who, A, took an enormous paycheck, B, had two corporate jets, and sort of is the personification, if you will, of corporate excess and greed. Now, I'm not saying that's fair assessment, but it is often the assessment. How do you look at that? How do you explain it? Or is that a fool's errand to try to explain it?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think the plane was a bad practice. I'm not going to defend that other than say that was bad practice. I would say, look, I understand the way people feel, right? Because the stock didn't work and that impacts a lot of people. But I really worked 7 days a week, 24 hours a day for the company. I love the company. I love the people. I was committed to its success. I really did try everything I could to make the company better. So again, one of the reasons to write the book, Joe, is not to dispel people that don't like me. You know, not to think that they're gonna like me, but to show them that the team really was a good team and really worked hard and really had lots of concerns and considerations for the people that we worked with and respected them and loved them. So that's all I can do.
One of the things that you write about in the book, and the subtitle is What I Learned Leading a Great American Company, there are lessons here. And you write that there is an argument for simpler is better. And you make a point, which I think is a really good one, which is all leadership is crisis leadership. We think of, oh, we're in a crisis. But you are here to tell us is, yeah, we're always in a crisis.
Yeah.
I find that interesting.
I think that's what's different. You know, in other words, the GE that I grew up in before I became CEO was really one of, you know, consistent growth. The U.S. was the economic engine of the world. The world was at peace. The world we live in today has pandemics, it has a geopolitical risk, it has a class warfare and all kinds of things in between. So, you know, I think the hope I have in the book, Joe, is that it's filled with stories, right? It's filled with decisions. There's probably in that book 1,000 decisions.
Right.
And, you know, some people are going to read it and say, he's a dummy. Why did he do that? But I think students of leadership down and say, okay, if I were in his shoes looking at these things at this time, what would I do, or what would I say, or what have I learned? And so what I tried to do in the book is kind of like, here's what we did, here's why we did what we did, but more importantly, here's how I felt. I was anxious, or I was trying to do this, or I was afraid, or I you know, and different things. And my hope is that in some of this, it's instructive to leaders.
When you look at the future of not GE necessarily, but just big companies, as you say in the subtitle, great American companies, what are the challenges for the great American companies? Is there such a thing anymore?
Yeah, look, I think there is, and I think there's still opportunities out there. But, you know, I've had the chance over the last 4 years to sit in Silicon Valley and the sea of innovation. And I think it's incumbent on all big companies to remain innovative and to try to remain adventurous and still take risk, right? It's hard to say coming through COVID that you need to lean forward and take risk, but that's exactly what I would say. And it's the only way to stay relevant. And look, Joe, you know, whereas maybe 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, GE was the definitive big company, you know, now that's Amazon, right? And I think you can sit and it, the way Amazon moves, and it uses its size to be a way to take risks. And there's a lesson in that. So again, I just think you've got to always be focused on the future, always.
Jeff Immelt is the former chairman of General Electric and served as CEO for 16 years. The new book is Hot Seat, What I Learned Leading a Great American Company. The book is published by Avid Reader Press. Jeff Immelt, I thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks, Joe. Great to talk to you, and thanks very much.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Hot Seat, What I Learned Leading a Great American Company by Jeff Immelt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.